All right. Welcome to the Toddcast Live with Bo and John and our special guest, Frank Ogle. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
How's
Frank?
Everybody doing?
I'm doing well. I can't stop staring at those Lord Draken exclusives from Hasbro in the background over there.
Do you want to exclude it? This is something, this is a secret. I ordered one and I was so happy to get that.
Did you get two too?
And 2 weeks later, randomly, I walk outside to my car and there's a box from Hasbro Pulse sitting there. I didn't even pay for both of them; just paid for one, and
I
they
got
sent me two.
As well.
Oh, it's wonderful! What a happy convenience!
A bunch of people didn't end up getting them, so they messed up real bad. But I'm happy.
That sucks. Mine are sitting back here. They look nice back here, all in a jumble of crap that I got back here. So,
oh my!
See,
you
pays.
Guys. You guys
figure,
and your
the figure's awesome though, so it's all the figure was awesome.
You guys and your Power Rangers. But that's cool. I'm just trying to get so I can watch the feed here. Just give me a second, guys. It's been a long day of doing nothing for once. All right, now I'm good. All right, so we have a little bit of NDC housekeeping where we're gonna tell you what our events are coming up real quick. This weekend we have our Hunker Down for the Holidays sale, which is 20% off all of our graphic novels, all of our wall and case display books, 60% off regular back issues, half off dollar books, Saturday and Sunday, all six locations. It's going to be awesome. This does not count on the website. You cannot buy them on the website like that. People have been asking about something like that. We have something in works. It's going to be a couple weeks, but we'll have something on the website for a website sale. Then after that, on Wednesday, which is the day before Thanksgiving, it is local comic shop day. So we have 50% off 50% off back or dollar books and back issues that day.
Are we going to, I didn't think we was doing 50% on back issues that day.
Yeah, regular.
That's,
regular
that's even
issues.
Better.
No, that's I even know better it's so good.
I actually wasn't aware. I didn't pay that attention.
So. I should fly out.
There you go. So, other than that, we also have these really awesome exclusives that a bunch of publishers put together. Bo, do you actually have a list of them again this time?
Or? No, but I think I remember more of them.
Okay, let's go for this.
the boom stuff, because that's all I've been like reading lately. It seems, well, to the most point, Something is Killing the Children, Spawn, the Power Rangers, which I know Spawn's not Boom, but Power Rangers, Mighty Morphin. There is a Lumberjanes one.
Yep.
There is, oh gosh, there's a cool Magic one for the new X of Swords. There's a, I don't know who did the cover, it looks really cool, but and there's more, but I can't remember. I'll remember some again next week once it's over.
You mean
so,
2 weeks from now when we
2 weeks
come back
from
after
now.
The
yeah,
sales
I'll
over,
remember
right?
them. I'll have them in front of me, like, here, I can finally spout them all off.
I so, bought all these, look at these, check them out.
Yeah. And the DC stuff looks pretty cool because it starts into that future first stuff, so kind of getting a look at all the future stuff. So
yeah, that's actually I think the one I'm most excited about. So all right, after that, obviously it's Thanksgiving, all the stores are closed, go have some turkey, nap, football things. Then Black Friday, all the stores will be open 10 to 7 in all six locations, which means extended hours in all of the locations. 25% off a $50 more purchase excludes dollar books because they're going to be half off, and booster boxes of like graphic or of like Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, also like any kind of trading cards, like football, baseball, and then in Elwood, any of the extremely super priced stuff that we have photocopies on the wall that we actually have the real book locked up so that you can't just take it, those will all be the exclusions. Everything else, totally on it. It's going to be awesome. But 10 to 7, Black Friday, good times. All right, time to talk some comics. All right, so so Frank, what we're going to do is we're gonna talk about some comics that came out literally yesterday. So you can chime in at all if you've read them or if you're interested in them or if you have anything you want to say in between. But we're going to do two books each, and then we're going to then kick all into you. So my first book is A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I found this book, even though it is going for like dumb money on the internet right now, to be really boring. Really, really boring. I think there is maybe 20 total dialogue pieces in this whole book. But the one that the big thing that I did like about it was I really like the art because it's all
it was good.
This cool like black and white silhouette stuff. So I really liked it because it reminded me a lot of like Sin City. But the story itself was really slow and really boring. I am curious to see where it leads and if it does pick up. So I'll at least check out the second part. But to me, the story is some kind of vampire warrior nun who's a vigilante. Was that what you got out of that, Bo?
Yeah. Like I said, I agree with you. It wasn't much really happened. I just thought the artwork was cool and then based off that older movie and whatnot. So
yeah, it didn't hit me very well. I guess.
No, I mean, it felt like there was only about 20 words in the whole book, but you can't complain. There was the G.I. Joe that everyone was kind of waiting on.
Yeah.
It was 12 issues and went down to 10. They did the whole finale, didn't even say a word in it, just had pictures and that was it. So
this is the second totally silent issue of G.I. Joe to ever exist.
It is, yeah. Okay. That's it. And they just finished it off. I was like, well, maybe there was more that you could have added to it, but nah.
It's fair.
But it's fair. All right, this week I'm going all Scout Comics this week.
Cool.
Frank at Home on the Farm, which is actually I thought one of the coolest covers this week. Second coolest, but basically it's just an animal farm kind of story where the animals are working to come at this guy. He's coming home from I think it's World War One actually, having some flashbacks of being in the trenches and whatnot, and you know, kind of foresees this happening, goes home, his family's not around. Nobody, I mean, back in those days, everybody knew everybody in little towns, and apparently none of the townsfolk know who his family is. So he goes back home and he can hear his animals talking outside, you know, plotting on him stuff. So it's got a real cool animal farm vibe, and you know, we'll continue reading it because definitely a little bit of horror aspect and whatnot. So we'll keep checking it out. So
I did enjoy that book as well. So
yes,
my next book is from Vault and it is a dark interlude. So I was really hoping that this book would be a little better than what it was, but I feel like they kind of do you guys read The Unwritten back in the day, the Vertigo book by Mike Carey?
Yeah.
It's got a similar-ish vibe to it in story, but it was like overly wordy. So I went from a book that had like 20 total word bubbles to like 20 per page. Like that's a lot of dialogue. And this isn't even Grant Morrison. So, but the art in this book is super good. The covers are amazing. But it kind of is like a character is keeps phasing through the world of like literary and non-literary, but it's like their book. So it kind of works out for it, but there's just something about it that I'm like, it's like you're trying to be Unwritten, but you're not. So, and I really have a lot of respect and love for Unwritten. I have like every single of that book. And, so to me, it was like it just kind of fell short a little bit, but overall, like I think it has a lot of promise, especially on the art end. But it was also a little more fantasy based, which I'm not a huge fantasy character. Like I like playing D&D. I don't want to read about D&D. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I mean, I love Lord of the Rings, and I read that first, but you know, that kind of thing.
That's Ryan O'Sullivan, right?
Yeah.
That's too bad. I really liked what was that other Vault book he did?
Oh, I think I liked that one though. I just can't remember what it is either.
We both like it so much.
Yeah, he didn't do Dark Black Stars. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
I'll look it up while Bo does his book.
Fine. All right. Next book, I wasn't certain if I was going to do this one, but it still stuck with me, and I thought it got the cover of the week. It needs to get some more love. The Recount, and this is the special one, Scarface homage cover. I loved it. I've actually read it before this week that it came out because I bought the ash can off eBay because it's a political book, and I wanted to hear what it was going to be about. I'd heard, you know, it was getting good things written about it. Basically, it is about the masses. Basically, the president is assassinated, and his people in his cabinet are even working against him. You know, his supporters and whatnot, they're becoming attacked by the masses. So it's basically like a, you know, just a political thriller with the purge mixed in and everything, and given the current climate and whatnot. It's a cool ass book, and I love it. So I'm hoping I continue to love it, because it's a political book, but there's no politics in it. And that's why I like it. Like, it's awesome in that respect, because that's the one thing I hate with comics. Don't put your politics in it. This is just coolness. So highly recommend checking it out. I really enjoyed it. So hoping it continues to be good, because it's got such a crazy Purge-esque feel, and we need some of that. Like, The Purge is just an awesome movie. So need to read it in some comics and whatnot. So
nice.
That was my book of the week. I loved it.
All right. So the book I think that we're thinking about was Fearscape. Yeah. Fearscape is actually, I think I read the first issue and I really liked it, but I never finished the rest of it. I'm pretty sure it's the prequel series to this book. And that's why I'm like a little, yeah. But I did like Void Trip that he did. That was pretty
good. I was going to mention that.
That was good. Yeah, that was good.
Really good covers on that series.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were great. All right. And now we're going to talk about our special guest, Mr. Frank Ogle, writer of Dead End Kids.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah,
mine's better.
I bought you that book. It doesn't matter.
I still got it.
It's awesome. Oh, nice.
Cool. All right, you win.
That's just showing off.
Yeah. Also, you've written No Heroin and Grief, and you won a bunch of awards for all of them. You know, No Heroin's also going on right now, and it's kind of like the. I love your pitch for it. It's Buffy meets Tank Girl, right? Was that the pitch?
Yeah, that was what we started with. That, like, I have a publicist now, a wonderful woman named Melissa who helps me get the word out, because I burn myself out marketing every time. So I brought on some help for No Heroin, and it's been great. And she came up with that pitch. I can't remember what it was before. It was a little less. It was like Buffy, but if she was a recovering heroin addict, so it was like a little less interesting.
Oh, okay. I will tell you, I reread Dead End Kids today, like volume one, just to get a refresher. Mm-hmm. And then you sent us a couple samples of the next couple issues that are coming out that are in previews right now to be ordered. And I will tell you, like, it was still good. I still really enjoyed it. It kept
it's got
the
that same feel.
Vibe. Yeah.
It's the feel of it. Yeah.
I think, okay, so for those of you who haven't read Dead End Kids,
you should.
You
so
should.
Why haven't you?
It's kind of this cool, melancholy, like ragtag group of guys that grow up together, that something bad happens that links them all together. And they go through the story. And it actually ends up being very, very, the climax of the story is very, what do I want to say? It's like, it's very attention grabbing, and it very much so like gets your heart racing. You're like, holy crap, like what's going to go on here? So I really enjoyed that. The second volume, I think is, I don't know how much you're going to allow us to talk about it. But I think it hits me. Okay. I think it hit me a little bit more because the main catalyst for all of the kids stuff in the second volume is 9/11. And
yeah, you guys are in Pennsylvania, right?
I'm in Pennsylvania. Bo's in Ohio. Okay. You know, and I was in college during 9/11. I remember what I was doing that day. I remember watching like the plane hit the Pentagon and the second building, and and freaking out because like I have family that works at the Pentagon. I had like, and then my family, my actual mother was in Pittsburgh at the doctor's, and then the plane went down in Somerset and she was trying to get out of Pittsburgh and it was literally a giant traffic jam. It was nuts. So like, I feel for those characters even more than the Volume One characters.
Agreed. And that I would go as far as to say that I like this book better. Like I know how it ends and I know what happens in the two issues. So I could be lying. But when I was trying to figure out like what a second book would look like, I kind of went back to the core concept of the original, and it really, you know, it's a crime book. It's a whodunit murder mystery, but it really is. It's a book about childhood trauma and like this question of like, do the terrible things that happen to us have to like, you know, fuck us up and make us into crappy adults, you know, like do we have to carry that with us forever? And I started thinking like, what's a way to do something like that again, so we're not doing the same book again, but it still is, you know, it's the same kind of book. So it's a sequel in that sense. And I just kept coming back to this idea of September 11th because it affected me in like a huge way. I grew up in New Jersey, so not too too far from you, but
yeah,
pretty far. And I grew up
in 6 hours.
Yeah, I used to make that drive, not quite out there, but to Lock Haven when I was there. I know the drive pretty well. But I grew up in a town that is on the southern shore of the Raritan Bay, which looks directly across the lower Manhattan. So like on September 11th, I remember standing on our beach and looking across and seeing that the smoke plumes come up and all the people around me. My family is full of firefighters, EMS, EMTs. A lot of my relatives were called into Manhattan to help with relief efforts. I had classmates who had aunts and uncles and cousins pass away in and around the towers. So it was all like very close to home hitting for me. And I kept coming back to this idea, like, how did this change things? Because, you know, we got the Patriot Act and that really created a lot of legislation that we live with today, even though the Patriot Act I don't think it got renewed when it was up for renewal. But like just the way we travel, I mean, like that affects everyone in the world now. Like anyone coming to the US from Australia or Japan or wherever, like they have to travel differently because of that. So it literally had a global impact, but I wanted to really explore the idea of like, how did this mess up a bunch of kids who are my age? Like, you know, I was 13 when it happened, and you know, what did that do to those kids? What did they look like 4, 5, 6, 8 years later, you know, what high? So like, and this, it's not a 9/11 book. Like I wouldn't do that. I don't think that's in good taste. I wouldn't want to make money off of like tragedy porn. Right. But it's very much a book about how that day affected these kids and what their lives are like 7 years later in 2008.
Right. I definitely, I like the fact that it was a catalyst that more people can relate to than the catalyst that was in the first book.
It's definitely not part of the book, but people like, I mean, as old as we are and whatnot, when you see that, it becomes like, you know, it drags you in. So definitely not the key aspect of it. It just brings up the feelings in you, so you kind of know what the kids are feeling. So
because I kind of remember being kind of having that lost youth feeling for a while there, for the next couple of years, kind of be like, what's going on in my country? How does it exist?
You gotta grab your American flag stuff. It's sad. So,
but I definitely enjoyed the first two issues. I'm really excited to see how it ends.
Yeah. I got to read them. I read issue number 2 and then issue number 1. Thanks to John, I wasn't paying attention. And I still followed along with it, so that's good. And I still liked it. So that was
kind of interesting. We'll do
reading order.
We'll do an all trade where 1 and 2 are flipped and see if anyone.
Just do it in reverse. Do 3, 2, 1.
Because it kind of had that same feeling. So I was like, yeah, I get the story. Like, I know it's kind of like that same feeling it had from the last one. I was like, it's pretty good. So
I almost wonder if it would be more. I know this is way late in the production end of this. If it would have been more beneficial to find out what the catalyst was at the end that is so relatable, or if it just makes it like the thing that sucks you in to go, okay, I can relate to these guys because I know that moment. So either way, because that would be kind of different to see like the whole thing play out and find out that the catalyst for everything was 9/11. But I guess it really wouldn't work out for some of the characters, like the girl whose dad's a fireman. That'd be a little weird, you know?
Yeah. No. So the characters were kind of born of the idea. Like, I worked backwards. It was like, all right, we have this huge cultural, political, however you want to frame it, event that affected all these people. Like, what kinds of characters would have been affected by it? The child of a firefighter or an EMS person, excuse me. You know, the relative of a soldier fighting in Afghanistan a few years later, you know, what's it like to be a Middle Eastern, you know, teenage girl in the United States after that? And I kind of retroactively built these characters from the idea, or reverse engineered them, I guess. There are so many other characters too, like different angles in, because like it's like a spider web of an event. Like, it's just got all these webs coming out that affect people in such different ways. And like narrowing down that list to like the three most sort of poignant, and it's technically four. Like the villain of the series, Ray, he is in a different way, like really deeply affected by the events, and it kind of leads him where he's going too. So it's really four kids and four different kind of angles into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely saw like a little better character dynamic in the second volume than the first one. And not to say that it was like I kind of felt for both, because like I was like the misfit kid growing up. Like, I hung out with all the punks and, you know, I was in a band and like, but weirdly I was straight edge. So at the time then I got to college and found out how much more fun things could be. But, you know, I was never really, like kind of accepted by my family, like, cause I was always like the weird, like crazy, like dude who would just do whatever he wanted. And I went to Catholic school, so it was very hard for me to do some of that. And the other thing that I forgot was in here that I absolutely, I kind of chuckled and went, oh, now I remember why I picked up this book and loved it so much, was because you have the lyrics to The Kids Aren't All Right in the opener in volume one. And, that was like, my high school, that was one of the records I bought like late in high school. And my band played Kids Aren't All Right all the time. Like, we covered mm-hmm. that song all the time. So it was just really, like I said, I really dug it. And I can't wait to, like I said, I can't wait to see how the second volume kicks out.
You know, that quote at the beginning of Dead End Kids Volume 1 was, it's something that I probably still to this day lose sleep over. Like, I'd never wanted to be that person who put like quotes at the front of their book. Cause like, it's pretentious. Like, it can be really, like, I think Stephen King uses it really effectively in his novels, but like more times than not, when I see that, I'm like, ugh, just throw it away. But then like the lyrics were just so spot on with what was happening in the book. Yeah. There's another song by Less Than Jake called Anthem for H Street, yep. Which almost was the quote for the book, because the book's set on H Street, which is short for Herbert Street, where I grew up. Nice. This one just kind of won that battle a little bit better for me.
Yeah, I think it really nailed the overall tone of the book. I almost recommend people buying it in graphic novel more than buying the singles, because like I think it flows very well from issues 1 to 3, just bam. I really enjoyed it. So
yeah, that was something that I was like really conscious of. I designed the trade. Like, I do pretty much all my own design work on all my books. Mm-hmm. And when I was putting that together, like, I thought, oh, we'll put the covers in between. I was like, nah, let's just do it as chapters. Like, you know, really, so, you know, small numbers in the bottom corner, just keep it going. Like, why give people a reason to stop? And like, I think that was the right choice there.
I agree. I definitely do. Mm-hmm. So, let's see. So No Heroine still on its way out with number 3. It's sort of out, right?
Yeah, depending on what story you're at.
Right. And how many issues is that going?
That's the last one.
Okay. Number 3 is left. For now. Cool. And then when is the graphic novel due out for that?
That's soliciting right now as well, actually. So that's
okay, cool.
Yeah.
I tied with Dead End Kids, the Suburban Job number 1 in the November catalog.
Awesome. All right.
So there's a chance that you'll get the trade before you get issue 3.
It's okay. We'll just sell a lot more of the trade. I don't know. So, I also have to tell people this awesome story. So, one of the other reasons that you and I have spoken before was in the middle of shutdown, I randomly get a Facebook message from you. Mm-hmm. And I imagine it's because New Dimension Comics has supported Sourcepoint a lot. And that someone probably just mentioned me, or you were like, hey, a shop that's open. I don't know. or sort of open, because we were doing mail order only. But I really have to say that I thought it was awesome that you did, like, what was it, like, a limited number of cover pressing. And you sent it out to X amount of stores only. They only got one each, and it was 100% to benefit the store to help them keep moving. And I just thought that was one of the coolest things. Yep, that was it. I just thought that was one of the absolute coolest things that anyone could have done. And not like, but like, so you specifically doing that through Sourcepoint was awesome. Like Aftershock did something like that. Boom did something like that. But that was just like, for me, was like really, really cool to be like, hey, somebody remembers us that we support local. And we really appreciated that. So.
We're doing a similar thing for Dead End Kids too. I actually have the Gemini packed mailers set ready to go. I just haven't figured out which stores yet, because my network's just so much bigger now, and I kind of have to do it randomly to be fair about it.
Right.
But when COVID hit, shops were taking such a big hit, not being able to be open or you know, really limited, and having to pivot really hard, and like, you know, there's so many things going on. And I grew up, you know, like dirt poor. Like this stuff in Dead End Kids is really biographical in a lot of ways, and like I definitely had a lot of help growing up, like church donations and food boxes and shit like that. And like, you know, I wouldn't be talking to you right now if it wasn't for stuff like that, probably. And now that I'm older and I've got a really good job that pays well, and comics are going well, like I am more than happy to kind of pay that kind of stuff forward, because, you know, it's important. Like, yeah, if you can take care of people, like you're supposed to, like that's what keeps everybody afloat. And I'm living proof of that. So to be able to do that was really cool. Sourcepoint is a great partner as a publisher for creators too, because they will let me do stuff like that. They really kind of, yeah, without getting myself in trouble for saying it, like let me do almost anything I want. I ask and they're like, yeah, absolutely, go for it. You know, if it helps you, if it helps comic shops, go for it. And when I pitched that idea, and then I don't know if you guys were one of the shops that got the free bundles of graphic novels that we put together, but we very quietly raised like $10,000 from a handful of donors to pay for the printing costs of a bunch of runs of books, and then we put bundles together to ship them out to shops for free because Diamond wasn't distributing, so they needed stuff for their shelves, so we wanted to put stuff on their shelves.
That's awesome.
And I mean, so to be able to do stuff like that, and then the retailer relief variant, stuff like that, and a couple other things. I don't want to like brag, so I'm not going to talk about all of it. It's not the reason we did it, but like to be able to do stuff like that, and to be in a place in my, like, you know, 4-year-old comic career to do stuff like that, have those relationships with retailers to be able to build them, like that's almost as important to me as making the comics, because making comics is only 20% of the effort, right? The rest of it's putting the book in people's hands and having the relationships to do that. And, you know, it's a scenario where everyone wins. I didn't do it so that way you would order no heroin. I'm glad that you guys did, but like, you know, I did it cause I wanted to help.
Well, we really appreciate it. And we will continue to support you. And we were already ordering no heroin at the time anyway. So it worked out.
Looks like I wasted one then.
Oh no, the customer that bought it was extremely excited. The day it came in, I had probably 50 text messages, and it went to I went down the line as they came in of who I was like, here's That's your awesome. first guy took it. So it was nuts. So I don't remember what it went for, but it was really good, and he was really, really happy about it. So
I don't know if you guys saw the post I did about the retailer ones that I'm putting together for Dead End Kids too, but we Sourcepoint does live auctions like every other week, and they had me on a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I don't know how to price these things or how to even like suggest that you guys price them. So like, let's auction one off there so we can get like a ballpark of what somebody might be able to or willing to pay for it. And then like, there was no bidding. First guy was like $350. Right. which is like seven times what I was expecting. So now I don't even know. Like, I was like, you know, go for at least $100. So
nice.
I can tell
if
you
we win, that, if we win the lottery to get one.
No, you guys are on the list. I did, okay. I did 10 stores that I chose and 15 at random from the list of others. And I'll let you guys know in advance. You're one of them.
All right. Thank you. We will make sure that goes to somebody's happy home.
Bose.
Maybe it might go to Bose happy home. Who knows? I'm sure some of our other employees may be fighting for it. It might not even hit a customer. It might just go to an employee that really, really wants it. You have a lot of fans in our employees too. So
that happened at a shop, and I can't remember which one it was. It wasn't. I thought it was Space Cadets, where Jen King, but I don't think it was her. But some shop, the guy just kept it. He was like, "I'm a fan. I want this for me. I don't need. I don't want it. I don't care about bringing money into my shop right now."
Nice.
I mean, if you're in a position, more power to you, right?
Right. So what was your home shop in Jersey?
So I've had a couple over the years. When I was in high school, it was Comic Fusion in Flemington. Mm-hmm. It's a small shop. It opened around the time that I found it in 2005, 2006. Then in college, it was a shop called Comics Plus, which has since closed. Mm-hmm. And then after Comics Plus closed, it was Comics Crypt. I don't know if you know Brian.
I think I've driven by there, or someone was like, "Hey, do you know this place?" I've never been there, but I've seen, I at least know that it exists. But I've never been there.
So. Their logo, do you know Tilly, like the like Asbury Park, like Mad Magazine looking cartoon character?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Their logo is like a Joker-fied version of Tilly.
Nice. So,
but yeah, no, Brian's great. I don't miss New Jersey too much, but one of the things I do miss is going into the shop, because it was kind of like, you know, the local barbershop kind of feel. Like everyone was there at 11 on Wednesday and everyone hung out and talked shop for a while. My shop now here in San Francisco is Mission Comics. They're great. Leaf is a great retailer. It doesn't have that same kind of community and culture. It's more of a, like a come in, get your books, head out kind of thing, which is too bad. Especially now that like I'm making comics, like I'd love to be able to, yeah, make those right. People buy my comics too.
Yeah. I mean, we have six stores and it's a little different at each one. Or it's, you'll have that chunk of time, but it's a different time at each store. For instance, like our waterfront store, it's like from 5 to 7 PM. It is like a bunch of guys that come in and they buy like the big stacks and they want to talk about stuff for like an hour. And we're just like, guys, we're really trying to get people out of here. Sometimes it's, we have a lot of work and we want to get them out. Yeah. So, but then like with Bo's store, it's usually like first thing Wednesday morning.
Everybody comes rolling in.
Yeah. And all the other stores, it's like a little different. The Mills is like around lunchtime, and Cranberries, like right at like 2 o'clock, like it's a weird 2 to 4 thing. I think it's because of traffic there. Cause at 4 o'clock traffic, there really sucks. So it's very interesting to see that, but yeah, we very much so love that community vibe. It is a little harder to keep up with it with everything that's going on in the world right now. You know, it's definitely something that we love. And that actually, our convention is a lot like that too. Our Three Rivers Comic Con is based on the idea of comics first. Like, we don't do TV movie actors. It is all creators, publishers, writers, independent, like everybody from the self-publisher to I think we've had Top Cow, we've had Dynamite, Aftershock, Source Point, I'm missing Black Box, Valiant, I'm missing somebody. We've had a good chunk of publishers. Oh, Devil's Due, we've had them up there. So it's kind of cool to focus on that kind of stuff and remind people where things came from. versus having like just like, oh, we're gonna have this dude from The Flash here and he's gonna suck all the money out of the room. But we may have a smaller crowd, but it's the crowd that the vendors and the artists want because they're there for that kind of stuff. So you're not like, it's not like New York where, you know, it's, you know, shoulder to shoulder 24, like the whole time. Oh my God. But it's, you know, you can walk around and you can be with your friends and hang out and move as a crowd. And it's cool. And Pittsburgh has a lot of really great talent living in it. Like Dave Wachter, who did Ninja Turtles. He's going to do that Iron Fist with Larry Hama coming up here. Ron Friends, Pat Olive, Scott McDaniel, Robert Hack. We have a lot of guys. Don Simpson, who did Megaton Man. We have a lot of great local people, and so it's a good base to build off. But we've had a lot of great people, and you are always welcome at the show anytime you want to come out from the other side of the country.
Well, you know, I definitely appreciate that, and I almost actually did come as a fan. My brother, up until last year, lived in Moon.
Oh, wow.
I don't know where that is relative to you guys, because I never actually made it out to visit him while he was living in Pennsylvania. But he works for FedEx, and he was training at corporate for a couple years before he went to take over a hub down in Florida. And he kept saying, I go to this every year. He's not even a big comic guy, but he likes getting out and doing things, and he knows I like comics. So he would go. I think he went 2 or 3 times, and he said it was a good show. His girlfriend's in a wheelchair, and she said that they were never too crowded, and like it was, yeah, but it was still really well attended. So I... It's on my bucket list for sure.
Awesome. Well, you can either partner up at the Source Point booth, because almost they're invited always, or you can have your own booth in Artist Alley. Whatever you want is fine. I'm the guy you got to coordinate with, and we're good. So
let's see what kind of mood Travis is in.
That's true. Or how many people he can spare to work it, because that's the other thing. So, but I think it's also good to see all the Source Point people at one big booth. Because you know, we usually get him and Stan and Casey, like and Elle, and they all just kind of hang out, and it's like it's almost like people just want a community there. But I will also say that Source Point is some of the hardest working people in the industry. When you go to a show, you walk by the booth and you are gonna get sold on something.
Bunch of fucking carnies. Everyone at Source Point is carnies. In like a good way. But you know, it's weird too, because They're the hardest working people, myself among them, though I'm not as good a salesperson as Casey, like, and I have no problem admitting it. I make it up by being better at marketing comics. But Source Point is like some incredibly, like, for lack of a better word, rabid fans. Like I've done C2E2 3 times now, and the same 3 or 4 people all 3 years came up and said, hey, haven't seen you since last C2E2. Give me one of everything you've done since then. Like, I've never seen that anywhere before. Like, awesome. They're not following creators. They're not following an artist. They're just like, this publisher, I like what you guys are doing. Which, I mean, outside of like Marvel and DC, like, you know, where they've got these big 80-year-long continuities, I can't even fathom that. It's crazy. Like, Source Point, there's something in the water, man.
Yep. Yeah, and it's crazy. Like, every time a new number one comes out, we have to order like twice what we would normally order. Even for like almost like an image book, like we're ordering like image number ones for Source Point, because people, you're right, people come out of the woodwork, they want 2 or 3 copies. You know, they're buying them for their friends or hooking their friends up. It's crazy, but I love it. So, all right,
I think part of that too is go ahead.
No, go ahead, you're good.
I was gonna say, I think part of it too is, I mean, if you look at the Source Point line, like. Not to blow too much smoke up their asses because they publish me or anything, but they do books that nobody else would touch. Like you don't see a lot of publishers doing black and white books that are like not very, very small publishers. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of people doing, you know, things with poetry in them, like Stan's books, you know, just like really wild concepts, art styles that, you know, other publishers wouldn't touch. Like it's, I mean, my first book, Grief Through Them, is it's a short story collection. Like that's not the kind of thing that any publishers, like an anthology by a bunch of people maybe, but by one person, point to me, point me at another one that you've seen in the last 5 years. Like, I can't name one. Maybe yeah. Adrian Tomine, like, you know, who's a really well-established decades-long career, you know. But outside of that, like, they're willing to take chances on people, and they see, like, value and potential where I think other people see, like, negative dollar signs, and it's working.
Yeah. I definitely think they have, like, a cool niche of what works. And I think everything they do has, like, this almost like a poetic justice style to it. Like, everything's just a little bit better than normal writing, and they rely very heavily on good writing. Like, Stan's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. Bo's a huge fan of him.
Like Stan.
And, you know, I've hung out with Stan a couple times.
Well, he's what got me into Source Point. That's how I started, like, branching off. Yeah.
Just takes one, man. Just takes one book.
It does. And then, you know, Casey did a small mini tour of our stores. And with Winora, I think issue 4, I think, had just come out for Nora. But she did a novel with Source Point.
Pieces of Madness.
So there's, you know, like, again, it's very good writing that I think they look at and they really grasp on to make it work. And maybe that's something that the big two can really look at, because they're always changing creative teams, but they don't have a solid story in a lot of things anymore.
You want to know what a lot, and even like my customers and whatnot, it's because it's more of a mature, it's more like thriller, horror most of the time stuff. And sometimes people just get sick of superheroes and they want good stories, like, where everything's just not all right all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, and that everything's going to save the day. And and that's why people, it's just more gritty, and just people really like it. Source Point's just really taken off, especially at my store. So
I think that they and you are honest. I think there's a realness to the books. Like, I didn't talk to any other publishers about Dead End Kids, and, like, I think if I talked to them now, they would maybe pick it up. But if I went to, like, Scout or Vault, like, 2 years ago with that book, they would have been like, nah, no thanks. This wouldn't sell. But Source Point was like, no, this is a good story about something that fucking matters. You know, like, not everything needs to be Daredevil fights the Hand for the 600th time.
Yes. Right.
I don't know. I think it could have fit into the Scout universe.
I definitely misspoke. The Scout guys are friends of mine. I like them. And I think that they are on the same path as Source Point. But with a little bit less of a horror bent. Horror and sci-fi are really Source Point's bread and butter, whereas Scout's doing a little bit of everything. They've got some superhero stuff. They've got some
Metal Shark, bro.
Yeah.
which
I thought was great. It's a shame that book came out kind of side by side with Murder Falcon, because so similar.
That was
Those
books are excellent, though. Yeah. So, all right. So, what is your? We always ask our guests, like, what is your origin story? Like, how did you get into comics? Like, what's your background, and how did you get to the point where you're at now?
That's a long question. It's like my whole life. I'll give you the cliff notes.
Okay.
I already talked a little bit about how I grew up. I grew up poor. Both of my parents really struggled with addiction problems. Like, things weren't great at home. And part of how I coped with that was kind of burying my head in TV and movies and books and stuff like that. And comics. When I was younger, it was a little harder to get comics, but, like, what I could grab, you know, the odd issue of Superman or Batman, Spider-Man, like, you know, I really kind of fell in love with those worlds. And that was kind of reinforced by growing up on, like, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, Batman animated series, Spider-Man, X-Men animated series, the lesser loved but still as good Fantastic Four and Incredible Hulk animated series at that time.
I actually own those on DVD. So
yeah, and that Fantastic Four is a perfect run of cartoons. But I grew up on that kind of stuff, really loved it. I also, about the time I was 9, Buffy came out, and I've watched that from day one when I was way too young. And that's kind of where No Heroine ended up coming from. But, like, I was just surrounded by sort of superhero characters, strong characters. And, like, that's the kind of, like, escapism, like, I kind of needed to cope, you know, with what was going on in my life. Fast forward a few years to when I'm in high school, I really, really liked reading, obviously. I liked writing, and at a young age, I kind of showed some promise there, according to other people. I don't know. Everyone said, oh, this is great. But when I got to high school, I went to Hunterdon and Central, which is in Flemington, New Jersey, at Western, like near the Pennsylvania border. Mm-hmm. And they had block scheduling. So I took two classes a day or four classes a day for twice as long rather than eight classes a day. And then halfway through the year, you switch to another 4-year class. So it was essentially worked out to be the same amount of class, but like broken up a different way. And that let me kind of really manipulate my class schedule to pack in a lot more English and writing and like advanced classes. So like my junior and senior year was all English and writing classes and like a sprinkling in of like that general education stuff you need to graduate. And around that time, that comic shop, Comics Fusion, that I mentioned a while ago, they opened up, and it was around the time Civil War was starting. Like I walked in, had a job, so I had a little pocket money, and I started picking up books. I think I pulled everything from Civil War because I was like, I want to try everything, you know. I got, you know, Miss Marvel and Frontline and all those good books, and I fell in love. All right. So like by the time I was 16, 17, 18, I had this like really healthy love of superheroes. I knew I loved writing. And I was like, all right, this is probably what I want to do. So I got to college. And I basically built my entire college career around the idea that I was going to be a comic book writer. I majored in English. I did a double major in communications. I had minors in graphic design and creative writing. So I was learning how to, you know, do print layout. I was learning how to write. I ran my school's newspaper for a couple of years, which taught me, you know, collaboration, project management, collaboration management, print production, like in real life. And like everything I did was like, how can this help the comics? I went on and got two master's degrees, one in like sort of general creative writing and fiction, and one in poetry, which ended up being like the really helpful one, the writing poetry is like really good for teaching revision and like the idea that the first draft isn't the final draft, and that really helped me. I'm also a little bit of a perfectionist, so like that really helped me with that. And then I graduated in 2011 with that second master's, and for almost 5 years, I did jack shit. I did nothing. Didn't write one comic. I mean, right, you get out of college, you hit the real world, and real life kicks in, right? I got a job. I was working 40 hours a week. More than that, honestly, I was commuting. So that's another 2 hours a day. Social engagements. I had a girlfriend. It was just like, there's not a lot of hours in the day to begin with. And like to take on essentially what is a second full-time job, like that's a hard thing to get started. But long story short, 5 years, I didn't do anything. A couple false starts, didn't really get a lot of traction. And then I got to a point where I was at a really good job, making really good money, great benefits. Had a house, had moved in with my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And I was really, you know, quote unquote successful, but like I wasn't fulfilled by what I was doing. Like I got up in the morning and dreaded going into work, even though the work was easy. And you know, I was like, is it Friday yet? Every single day? And like that started to weigh on me. And like in like December or November 2015, my wife, who's still my girlfriend at the time, kind of sat me down. I was like, what's up with you? You don't seem like yourself. And we just had this long conversation about how, like, you know, I wasn't fulfilled and things, I didn't want things to be like the way they were. And I didn't like my job, in spite of it being like good by a lot of metrics. And she said, well, like, if you could be doing one thing, one job, what would you be doing? And I didn't have an answer for that. Because I hadn't even thought past like the fact that I didn't like the job, and I didn't really have anything to say to that, so I just kind of just threw it out there. I was like, I want to make comics. Like that's what I want to do. I want to write comics. And it really wasn't like a serious answer. It was more of a just putting it out into the universe kind of thing because I had nothing else to say at the time. And then she looked at me and she said, "Well, okay, what would you need to do to make that happen?" And like that's like the moment where this all got like very real. Because she was dead serious. She was like, if this is what you want to do and this will make you happy, like, how do we figure out how to make this happen? And like, I kept pushing back. I was like, no, there's no money in comics. It's really hard to get started. Yeah, it would be a huge, huge mistake. We'd lose our house. Our dog would have no food in her bowl, you know? But that conversation essentially ended with us agreeing that I would take a year off work. I would work a little bit on the side doing some freelance stuff, but essentially take a year off the entire year of 2016 to learn how to write comics, like really figure out like how to take all those tools and skills I had and figure out how they work for comics and apply them, go out and network, go out to conventions and meet publishers, put together my first book, which ended up being Grief. And, you know, for the entirety of 2016, it was, you know, up at 5 a.m., asking to sit at the computer, reading, writing books, doing actual writing, taking classes with Comics Experience, which is the most incredible comics creation resource in the world. And I'm more than happy to talk more about that. But yeah, I mean, I took that seriously. Somebody took a huge chance on me. Somebody cared enough about me to give me this incredible, huge opportunity. And like every single day I made that count. And I took that first Comics Experience class in February. That ended in April of 2016. I walked out of there with my first written script, a little 5-page short story that was professionally edited by somebody who had edited at Marvel Comics. And like, I was confident that like it was worth pursuing. I got an artist, a colorist, a letterer. Most of those people are the folks who work on Dead End Kids now, all these years later. And like 3 weeks later, I had my first finished, you know, drawn, lettered, colored comic pages in my inbox. And it was just a 5-page short story for a story called Grief, it's called Embrace. It's the last story in Grief. But like when I opened those pages, like I had this feeling, like I can't describe it. I think it's what people feel when they see their kid for the first time. I'll let you know someday if it matches up. But like, I don't know. Like I think it's what heroin addicts feel like when they shoot up for the first time. I don't know. But that's a terrible analogy. I apologize. But like I felt that feeling. And I was like, oh my fucking God, I'm kind of good at this. Like I can make this work. And like, that was the first domino. And from there, it's just every single day without fail, unless I've been like on death's doorstep because I'm sick. I've been writing comics every morning, networking with publishers and retailers like you guys, and just really putting at everything I could do, throwing everything out the wall that I have to make this work. And that was almost 5 years ago. I've since put out Grief, which is a short story collection, ended up getting nominated for a Ringo Award in 2019. Dead End Kids, which was huge success, like way bigger success than I ever fucking imagined. No Heroine came out this year, doubled the pre-orders from Dead End Kids, was similarly received. Dead End Kids 2 is seemingly doing well so far in pre-orders. I got a Best Writer and a Best New Series nomination and win at the Independent Creator Awards last year. And just like we were talking about before we started recording, can't say too much about it, but I got my first paid work at a big studio, big publisher this week. So like, you know, 4.5 years is not a long time for all that stuff to happen. I know that Brian Bendis was writing comics for about 10 years before he got in at Marvel. So like, you know, yeah. I'm not even gonna start to compare myself to Brian, but I don't know. Like, I don't know how to stop now. And I'm afraid of what would happen if I tried. So I just keep going.
Yeah, don't stop. Don't stop. It's not worth stopping. Actually, we had a friend of ours. Do you know Justin Birch? Do you know Justin Birch?
Well, listen, I know that Justin Birch is a Penguins fan, and maybe you are too. And I have some words for you that we can say offline. as a Bruins fan, one team wears those Bruins colors. Well, one
team. How are you from Jersey and you like the Bruins instead of the Devils? I figured that just doesn't match up.
Well, listen. At least, listen. You're not a Flyers fan, so you're okay with me.
I was a Flyers fan for one day this year. Philadelphia got a pass, and then now I'm not again.
Right.
You know, I had a weak moment where I said they could win the cup, and then I took it back.
But Justin talked about Comics Experience. He was on last week, I think.
Two weeks ago.
Because mm-hmm. He took the lettering class with them, and that was
And now he's lettering everything.
Yeah, actually, he had Sea of Stars came out this week.
Right. My helpful, my
your honorable
shout
mention.
Shout out to him. Yeah, yeah, shout out to Justin because it was awesome too.
Justin actually shops in Bo's store. Mm-hmm. So, because he lives in Wheeling, which is right beside Bo's store in Ohio. So,
And where does he live in Wheeling? Like, where can I send a care package of Bruins gear to?
You can send it to our Ohio store and we can make sure that he gets it for you.
Give it to him on Wednesdays.
I say all this as I'm wearing a Sharks hat, like, right? Which I also like the Sharks. They're now my local team because I live in San Francisco.
Right.
And I did like that. I like when I watch sports, I like to have a team in each conference. So like there's always a game I can watch every week, whether it's football or hockey or whatever. But I'm a Bruins fan, but this is embarrassing that I'm wearing this hat.
It's okay. We won't hold you to it.
It's fine. I'm not a Patriots fan, though. I hate the Patriots. So
then we're good. I like the Chiefs. You're out there in San Francisco. I like the Chiefs, because
I'm a Niners fan. I've been a Niners fan my whole life. And I can't win on this video.
Oh, man.
Not this one, huh?
Oh, man.
Mahomes is the second coming of Brady. Like, I have no problem admitting it.
And Brady's better than Belichick. Like,
Brady's
the truth. I never thought so. Yeah,
definitely better than Cam Newton.
Yeah.
All right. So we're now at the point where I'm going to do the three questions, which are just something I do that's kind of fun. All right. So if Dead and Kids were made into a movie or a TV show, who would you dream cast as your Volume One characters?
That's extremely hard because I have no idea the names of any child actor.
You could be like that dude from Stranger Things,
if time were not relevant, maybe Jonathan Taylor Thomas from the 90s.
Nice.
Like, maybe he could be in there. One of the Stranger Things kids, maybe. Yeah, they're all pretty. They're all pretty good, honestly.
Yeah.
I know who Avery, the old man. He would be Clint Eastwood. In a heartbeat, because that's literally who he's based on. So, if we can somehow de-age Fred Durst, he could be Bulmer, the bully. I've got some ideas. The budget would have to be pretty big, though.
Fair. All right. So, my next one is actually, you already kind of answered it because it was what kind of music do you listen to? Because I was like, I kind of feel like you probably listened to a lot of punk and emo growing up. So
I did. I like punk. I like emo. My favorite band is Newfound Glory, which I'll own it, that they're big when I was a kid. But I listened to a lot of like street hardcore punk, like the Casualties and the Virus and
nice.
You know, Pittsburgh, right? The Anti-Flag. Stuff like that. But I also like kind of like underground rap too. Like it's got that same punk rock feel where it's about being poor and shit like that I know about. In my later age, like these years, adding to that, like a little bit of classical and opera stuff, like there's definitely like some value there. And like now that I can get past like the pretentiousness of it, my wife's family is very into that stuff. So like I've been introduced through like a neutral third party instead of like it being forced on me like in school or something.
Right.
There's really nothing I don't listen to anymore. I generally don't listen to a lot of music anymore. Like I feel like I haven't listened to new music on purpose since 2003.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that, that I kind of feel the same way. The older you get, the less willing you are to find the new stuff, or you don't know how to anymore because it keeps changing. I have a music business degree. So like, I've listened to a lot of stuff. I've studied a lot of stuff. But punk is like one of my all time favorites. And, I'm a big Bouncing Souls guy, like the Jersey Man.
Speaking my language now. All right.
Hold on.
Now the souls are great. I love telling people like, yeah, no, that's the bottom of a boot, man. They're not talking about like souls. They're talking about souls.
Yeah.
But for everyone listening, if you haven't yet, go listen to the soundtrack for Spider-Man Miles Morales, the video game, because that is one of the best soundtracks I've heard in a really long time. Like it's just good amp up music. And like, I've definitely been listening to that while I write lately. So go listen to that.
All right. This last one is based 100% on if you've watched the last episode of Mandalorian.
like the most recent one?
Yeah, the one with Bo-Katan.
I haven't watched any of this season. Okay. I also don't know dick about Clone Wars or Rebels. So
okay.
Whatever your question was, that's my answer.
This will just be a really fun question because Bo knows what this question is going to be. So
I don't know what a Starbuck is. I don't know any of that. Actually, I seem to know a lot more about this than I thought.
So you know, I mean, you know what a Mandalorian is, right? Like, you know what Boba Fett was, like, that they're a clan.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've watched the first season of the show. I mean,
okay. And this kind of blew up on Twitter. Gail Simone kind of blew it up, and I just thought it was funny, and it got me thinking. So a lot of people are talking about the fact that Bo-Katan has boob armor because she's a female, right, in the chest plate. And the thing that struck me was she was like, this armor's been passed down for generations. And all I thought was, is it passed down to only women, or do they remelt it and redo the chest plate every time they pass it down? What are your thoughts?
Well, based on what I know from Mandalorian culture from the first season, I got to imagine that they do reuse and recycle their armors. Maybe if somebody dies, they're not going to let that very precious rare metal go to waste. That said, I've not seen a lot of female Mandalorians, like, and that's probably more Hollywood than the fake culture. But I like to believe that there's a strong line of women Mandalorians who own that piece of armor, and like, you know, they're the ones who, you know, when fucking Mando turns around, they're gonna kick his ass because they can. Just in my little headcanon.
You kind of summed up that episode, so we'll see how that goes.
once I finish The Boys season two, I'm going to get over to
super good. Super good. But
there's only so many hours in a day.
Right. Well, that kind of wraps it up. Just some last couple announcements here real quick. Next week, we are off because it's Thanksgiving. The week after that, we have Gus Mock and Neil, the guys who are doing Shino Cage for Black Box. Gus is actually going to do a live sketch while we do this, and someone who's watching live is going to win it at the end of it. So that's pretty cool. They're both friends of ours. They're from the Altoona area of PA. So check that out. Make sure you guys pre-order Dead End Kids Suburban Job. It's coming out. And always, as always, support your local comic shops, especially through this crazy holiday season. A lot of us have moved online, and you can shop a lot of stuff online, including all six of our stores. So check it out. Well, I want to super thank Frank for doing this. This is awesome. Thank you so much for spending an hour and hanging out with us. I hope you had a good time.
Super, you're welcome.
You are always welcome to come back on. So when No Heroin Volume 2 comes out, we'll talk about that.
Chris and I started talking about that this week, so you never know.
Or whenever that super secret paid project kicks in, we'll have you back on for that.
That will come out in June. We will talk about that someday soon.
I can't. Yeah, you'll have to come back for that.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching, and we will see you after the Turkey Day. Thanks, guys.